Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. It's been a great while since we checked in with FNX, First Nations Experience, the Native American-centric network delivered by PBS Multicast Transmissions. Well, that while ends in a few minutes when FNX overseer Frank Blanket joins me next. Another 2022 Primetime Emmy nominee comes your way next half hour. Mike Prickett is up for nonfiction cinematography on the acclaimed HBO series of last summer, 100 Foot Wave. How we filmed this project is an inspiring tale all its own. Also ahead, Next Star takes over the CW, a Halloween season trick and treat from Guillermo del Toro, our classic trivia question and up segments, and stand by for NFT-based television. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, then on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, iTunes, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you all for joining us on this Monday afternoon. It's going to be a big week here for the program All About TV's current and future, and delighted you are part of it. This is the first of 4 episodes we're doing this week. That's right, 4. Today, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Friday. Today, we're on an hour later than normal. The rest of the time, we will be back at our regular time period, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. And we have great guests for you each of our 4 episodes. So be with us. Tell your friends to join in. It'll be a hoot for you and me. So if you have a question or comment for our guests this hour and change ahead, why not pick up the phone, make a call. Here's the number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. And we've got a chat room in business again. It's Simon Apple 04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Remember, you can connect others as well using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen, follow the instructions, other people can be live with you. 80 degrees at the top of the hour, Frank Blanket from FNX joins us live from San Bernardino, California, after these news notes. The CW is now in the stable of major broadcast station and News Nation owner, Nexstar. The company has landed majority control, as in 75% ownership of the broadcast network formerly co-managed by Paramount and Warner Brothers Discovery. Both organizations will keep a 12.5% stake in the CW and produce original scripted content only through next summer. Now, whether that relationship continues beyond mid-2023 is a question that is a question mark at this moment. In an investor debrief this morning that avoided a question-answer session, Nexstar executives promised to spend $2 billion a year on promoting for both the broadcast net and the CW's 24/7 app offered through smart TV sets and devices. Plus, have the overall operation profitable by 2025. And I quote, "This enhances our revenue opportunities and will be among the most creative transactions we've done," unquote. That's adding Nexstar Chairman and Chief Executive Officer Perry Sook at the debrief. Also, current CW Chief Executive Mark Pedowitz will stay on in that capacity and handle day-to-day operations for the time being. Guillermo del Toro is set to make his next TV mark with Netflix anthology program Cabinet of Curiosity. Each of the 8 episodes in the series will offer a supernatural tale hosted by Del Toro. In an unusual release effort by Netflix, the series will premiere over 4 consecutive days, 2 installments per day, from October 25th, that's a Tuesday, through 28th, that's a Friday. Del Toro executive produced and contributed storylines for 2 of the 8 episodes. Lionsgate and Peacock will collaborate on a 3-part event production inspired by the John Wick movies that were originally supposed to happen at Starz. The Continental will detail both how Wick came to be and the formation of Assassin Hideout Continental Hotel. The cast will be led by Colin Waddell, Mel Gibson, and Anime Agdon. The miniseries will unfold over 3 nights, and Albert Hughes will direct the opening and closing episodes, while Charlotte Brandstrom will do the middle portion. We'll have more news, no quickies, after the top of the hour. Back on August 3rd, we introduced you to a Netflix-type service featuring Native American-created and oriented content called Red Nation. It was the first time that this service, which has been operating since the first decade of this millennium, had been going above the radar screen and finally being showcased on a national television or radio program, as far as we can tell. It happened, by the way, at a time that over the last year, we have seen Native American content really make its mark and break through to a mainstream audience, with shows like Dark Winds on AMC, Rutherford Falls at Peacock, and the Peabody-winning Reservation Dogs on FX. All 3 shows are getting second seasons or have just done second seasons. And that got us thinking about the status of another Native American programming service that we covered in this program a bunch of years ago. The service is called FNX, short for First Nations Experience. It came about thanks to a $6 million grant to a public television station in California. The service started originally in Los Angeles, then went national 8 years ago. At the time we had the person you're about to hear on this program, the service would have been running in certain markets around the country. Well, now, to find out where the progress has been, joining us live from San Bernardino, California, where the network is based, FNX Overseer, Frank Blanket. Frank, welcome back. It's great to have you after quite a long time.
Thank you, Simon. I'm glad to be here.
Well, when we last had you on, which had been, I think, like 4 or 5 years ago, the service was still feeling its way around the country. And I understand from reading the website that it has made a lot of progress, particularly in the last year.
We reach 74.5 million households across the country, Alaska, California, New York, Oklahoma. I mean, there's a lot of stations that have picked us up statewide. We're in a total of 26 states on 23 stations. We just went live in the state of Nebraska statewide, and we are pretty confident that we will go live in Topeka, Kansas pretty soon. To give you listeners a backstory of what FNX is, we are distributed by PBS. We're the only national Native American television station in the country, and we've been growing, and it's an exciting time right now for Native media.
Mm-hmm. And incidentally, one of those PBS stations is carrying it is right here in New York, WNET, through the WNET group.
Correct.
Before we get into the content and how it's been impacted by the breakthroughs that shows like Dark Winds and Weathered Falls and Reservation Dogs have been having, has there been any discussion about expanding the distribution beyond multicast through PBS stations through smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and even multi-channel bundles like Pluto TV or Plex or Zumo, et cetera?
Yes. So we are in talks with a company right now. And I don't know that we could disclose that yet, but the one that we are live with is a company called service called Local BTB, L-O-C-A-L, B as in boy, T as in Tom, V as in Victor, Local BTB. And we are in about 22 markets via the Local BTB app. It works on smartphones, laptops, Roku, Fire Stick. I have it on Fire Stick at home and on Roku, aside from the smart TVs. And so if you're in San Diego, in Phoenix, in Atlanta, Northern California, Los Angeles, you currently have the FNX channel through the Local BTV app. And I encourage everyone to visit localbtv.com. Download this free app. There are some subscription-based services that are streaming services that we are working with now. But it will be in their basic tier, so you're not going to have to pay extra to get FNX. If you're subscribing to some of these services, we'll already be included in the lowest tier service for many of these companies. So yes, we do have a streaming service available. You could also go to fnx.org and see a lot of our content. We will be launching a revamped website that will have a lot more content pretty soon. We will have a lot more online access towards the end of this year.
How has the programming on FNX evolved over the 8 years?
Well, you know, the last couple years, we like everybody else, had a lot of Zoom news content that launched, and it actually paved the way to launching the first daily Native American and Indigenous-themed newscast, which is ICT, formerly Indian Country Today. So that was something that was exciting that really started as a kind of pandemic informative piece, also a piece that had a lot to do with Native voting. When the pandemic hit, it just transitioned to, the thought was maybe do like a weekly update, but it turned into a daily news. And it's the first daily news in the United States with a sole focus on Indigenous news, Native news. We do have a lot of content that's still coming to us from other Indigenous stations, whether it's APTN in Canada, CBC Indigenous, Maori TV, Australian TV. And then we are producing a lot of content. We had a music series called Studio 49 that had launched and was aggressively marketing before the pandemic hit. And, you know, slowly as things start to open back up, we're going to start shooting more in the community as well. But yeah, there's, I mean, when you go to our show, we do have a lot of new travel and cooking series on the station. One show that comes to mind is called Moose Meat and Marmalade. So it's two chefs, one is an English chef and the other an Indigenous chef. But really there's our kids programming on the FNX channel competes with PBS's national feed as far as PBS programming goes. And so we're really proud of that.
We're talking about FNX, First Nation Experience. It's the Native American television network that is syndicated through PBS multicast channels. That means in whatever the market is, it's either on the digital signal of a PBS station or you can get it on your local cable or satellite system. Frank Blackwood is the
And in New York, in your local station, we're on the main channel.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, in your market, we are on the main channel. So there's a couple of PBS stations that put us on the .1. And your local channel is one of them.
Good to know. And way to go, WNET Group. And Jenny, congratulations to Nebraska Public Media for being your latest affiliate. I saw the
yes.
It went on the air. I saw your website and saw that they had just joined. So congratulations to them and all their crew for making it happen. And Frank Blackwood, who you just heard, he joins us live from the network's headquarters in San Bernardino, California this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy you're with us for the first of four episodes this week for the program all about TV's current and future. Haven't done four in a week in a long time. Tommy Appon with you live from New York, 80 degrees at the top of the hour. Want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906 or do our chat room, SimonApple04. My name, our very good friend from Philadelphia, Rick Webb, is already in the room. Our second episode comes your way at our regular time, 3:30 Eastern Pacific, and our lead guest will be from the new all-black scripted series, Send Help, which premiered last week and is having a special event tomorrow night. We'll have co-creators, they're both from Insecure alumni. They're Gene Ellie and Mike Goyo. They'll be with us live tomorrow, 3:30 Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And then Wednesday on our program, among our guests, we'll live to England to hear the executive producer, writer-director of the new Peacock miniseries, The Undeclared War. It's all about the possibility of a cyber war between countries. And if you think it's just affecting, a little feed here and a little feed there, wait till you see what Peter Kosinski has put together. That's coming up on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Smart Bee Television. We have a 90-minute edition coming your way on Friday to wrap the week. Tell you about that in a little later on. Frank, go back to the newscast. How are they doing, and what kind of topics are really hitting home with viewers?
Well, I think it's vast. Obviously, lately we've had a lot of Native representation in media, you know, with Prey, I think, is a big topic right now. But before that, you had Dark Winds, which premiered on AMC+. You had series like Reservation Dogs that is in its second season. Rutherford Falls, which is also entering its second season. So that is a big part of the news as of late. But I mean, whether it's indigenous issues south of the border, whether it's climate change, whether it's candidates that are coming up for election. We actually have a ICT live event happening from our studio on November 8th during the elections because a record number of Native candidates are running for office. So the news comes out of the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism at ASU in Phoenix. So they're in a perfect place to really, I think PBS NewsHour is shot in the same studio that they are in, the same room, probably across the set from them. And so they're doing really good. But I mean, it's you know, Indigenous news is just as vast as any other news. You know, whether it's positive stories or, you know, there's always struggles happening, whether it's with pipelines or fracking. But it's a vast, it's both feel-good stories and stories that take on issues.
What kind of contribution are PBS stations making in programming to your venture along with distributing you?
Well, I think that's one of the exciting things, right? Nebraska is home to Vision Maker Media. So Vision Maker Media has been the distributor, premier distributor of Native American and Indigenous content within the PBS system. So a lot of the Native themes programming that you see on whether it's America Reframed or whether you see it on the World Channel or on FNX, of course, Nebraska has a direct contribution to Native content. Same with KNME in New Mexico, KUAC in Alaska, KTOO with their programming from 360 West. Lakeland Public Television has a longstanding relationship with one of the tribes out in their area. And we also have tribal stations. Aside from the PBS stations, we also have five tribal stations, two of which are actually three of which constantly produce content. The one that probably produces the most is Cheyenne and Arapaho TV out of Oklahoma. But there's a constant influx of content that's coming from different PBS stations that, whether they're an FNX affiliate or not, they're building Native content, and they love the fact that this content is reaching people on a national scale through FNX. So, you know, if we have somebody that's watching content coming from Lakeland, but they live in Los Angeles, they have this connection to home. One woman that we interviewed at an event after a screening in Los Angeles is from Fairbanks, Alaska, and she said, "I have not been home in over 30 years, but FNX gives me that bridge to feeling like I'm home." And that her story resonates across the country, whether it's in Chicago or Philadelphia or in New York or any part of California. I think we are a tie-in to Native people that are away from their homes. And there's a lot of Indigenous people that are away from their homes. A lot of the Latino populations that come to this country for a better life are actually part of the Indigenous communities from their home countries, whether it's Mexico or El Salvador, Guatemala. You know, these are a lot of Indigenous immigrants. And so we are probably one of the only stations that ever has broadcast content in their native languages.
When we talked with the head of Red Nation Television Network nearly 2 weeks ago, and we asked the question, what kind of impact has Dark Winds, has the success of Reservation Dogs, has the success of Reservoir Falls, what has that done for your service? Are you, for example, starting to get proposals from people who want to create scripted shows or unscripted series for your network? In a position to greenlight things. I'm wondering if that, you know, what that has been for you. Are you starting to get proposals from people saying, "I'd like to do a scripted show for FNX. I'd like to do an unscripted show. I'd like to do this variety kind of thing."
Yeah, well, I think FNX has always had those proposals coming in since we launched. You know, the difference being between us and entities like FX and AMC is that those are commercial entities where we're part of the we still fall under the PBS donor-funded market, right? And so some of these big budget pieces we would not be able to move forward with. There are a lot of series that we have co-produced. We have done some co-productions with APTN, where producers from that are working with whether it's CBC Indigenous or APTN. We partner with them to help these series come to fruition, and then we air them on the station. But what I think what it shows, and we've always said this to people, is that Native content is really just as American as any other content. The interest in it is there, and it has always been there. You know, I think now the mainstream media is starting to pick up on things, and honestly, you know, even within the PBS system, you look at something like Molly from Denali that is having such a big success, that has a Native writers that it focuses on an Indigenous community. And we were doing that probably 10 years before Molly from Denali launched. And so when I listen to the producers from Molly from Denali address PBS and see the success that series is having within the PBS system, some of those same words were things that we were saying, you know, when we launched 10 years ago. We're a little bit over 10 years old now, and going on 11 years old. And it's just, I think people are listening right now because of the success of some of these mainstream pieces. And I will say that the producers from and a lot of the directors that have worked on Res Dogs were featured on FNX, you know, maybe in 2012, 2013. So to see their progression, I mean, even Taika Waititi had films, the director of the last two Thor movies had films that we featured on FNX. So seeing them grow and seeing them become successful, like Sterling Harjo, you know, from Reservation Dogs, or Jane Myers has had a footprint at FNX at one point, and she was a producer for Prey. You know, seeing them grow and come to fruition in mainstream media and seeing the impact that it's having on the general public, not just native, and not just the native community, I think it's amazing.
You're hearing Frank Blanket. He is the overseer of FNX. First Taste Experience, which is available through public television stations, multicast channels, and some markets through smart TV sets and smart TV devices around the country. If you have a question or comment, or many minutes with Frank, who joins us live from the network's headquarters in San Bernardino, California, beautiful, beautiful city, I might add, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Got a big night in addition to wrap up this four-episode week on Friday. Our first guest from the brand-new Apple TV Plus Good for All Ages series, Surfside Girls, will have co-developer, executive producer, writer, and showrunner, Mei Chan. Then we'll get into a deal that was done last week between, guess what, Flex, the multi-channels bundle, and Nextstar, which announced today its deal to take over the CW, specifically involving creating a channel out of the popular The Hill. We'll have the general manager of The Hill, that's Jason Jaslitsky, and we'll have Plex's vice president of strategic alliances and content, Sean Elders. And finally, you'll meet somebody who is fascinated by TV and movie westerns. His name is Henry Park. He's the entertainment editor for True West Magazine. He has a podcast on the state of the Western. And we'll talk to him about the state of the contemporary television Western and where it's going in this era of plentiful TV. That's all coming up on a 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised to wrap up your week Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Frank, a number of Native American organizations like the Cherokee National Film Office and other similar organizations are stepping up their efforts to try to do more television, try to do more film. Are you on their radar screen in terms of original content for your network?
Well, the Cherokee Film Office produces Osillo, Voices of the Cherokee People, and that's been a longstanding show for a few years on FNX. And so they are going to be producing more content. We're excited to see what that is going to look like and where it's going to be distributed. You know, obviously, a lot of entities look for distribution within larger markets. But, I mean, we are always here. So yes, Cherokee Film Office is one. Aqua Sosny TV in New York is another one. Shiner, Arapaho TV, like I said earlier, has been distributing content for a long time. Gila River Broadcast out of in Arizona has started to produce a lot more content. But yes, another entity, Chickasaw TV, has been producing content for a long time as well, including feature films. And so we'd love to be a showcase for this content. I think being in a position to, you know, a lot of networks will look for Native content to broadcast in November for Native American Month. But for us, you know, we're always celebrating Native content. And so absolutely, you know, as content starts coming out from different tribally owned entities, we would love to be a venue for these projects.
What about the possibility of getting programs underwritten through either sponsors or foundations?
Yes, that is a lot of the content that we broadcast currently Has come through different grants, whether it's you know, here in California we have Cal Humanities grants, but there's other language grants are a big thing right now as well. There are organizations, you know, I could use Navajo Nation, for example. They found grants that converted the Finding Nemo film to the Navajo language. We broadcast on FNX a couple of years ago. They also translated Star Wars, the original Star Wars, A New Hope, to the Navajo language. And so there are definitely Vision Maker Media is another funder for indigenous content. And I will say APT, NIDA, there are organizations out there and there are foundations out there that will fund a lot of these cultural programs, a lot of these language-based programs, a lot of these programs that will give a voice to underrepresented communities. So there are definitely out there, underwriters are definitely out there. Indian Country Today is one of those organizations that has pounded the pavement looking for funding for their daily newscast. I think that the possibilities are there. I think tribes that are in a position to fund a lot of these projects have been doing so. It's been growing lately. You know, it used to be that they funded a lot of film festivals, but now they are funding a lot of content. And I think that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Two-part final question, Frank. First, is there a particular program coming up before the end of the year that's premiering that you're very excited about being on your service? And two, given that we're now seeing more Native American TV makers create series pilots, both scripted and non-scripted, and they're running them at places like Series Fest in Denver, other TV festivals, as well as film festivals, like Dances with Films, which is where you are in Los Angeles, is there a possibility that perhaps FNX could take a look at some of these programs and see if they might become series at some point?
Yeah. I'll start with a lot of the programs that we're just premiering now. I mentioned Moose Meat and Marmalade, which I think will be a series that will be pretty popular. You know, it's a travel and food series. Our kids programming has a revamp that includes a series called The Magic Canoe. It includes a series called Louis Says. And then there's a couple of feature films that we're looking at right now that we're screening to premiere in November during Native American Month. There is a series that talks about cultural burns in California. And you know, a lot of the troubles that we have with fires in California, they outlawed a lot of these cultural burns or traditional burns a few years ago. And of course, the fires have kind of started to become really problematic for us. There's quite a few shows in different genres of TV that's coming out. We always, you know, love showcasing musicians. We have a weekly news series that is new every Friday. It's kind of like a what MTV used to be, a music jukebox series called The Aux Aboriginal Uni Experience that premieres a new episode every Friday. And so we always have the opportunity to showcase different artists, whether country singers, whether hip-hop artists, violinists, very, very eclectic grouping of music videos on this show. Usually ends in a short conversation with artists, kind of like a little profile of the work that they do. But definitely, to answer the second part of your question, yes, I think a lot of programs are getting a second window, you know, even if you know, they change networks or they transfer it over to digital. They will have a long-standing place for FNX, even as networks move away from them or streaming services move away from them. It's nice to have a premier destination for Native content that maybe is new right now but might get a little dated to some of these big streaming services. But for us, you know, like we love showcasing the work of Native artists, native filmmakers, native writers, and so I don't think we have a problem showcasing the work for years to come.
If you want to know more about FNX, First Nations Experience, which is available in more than 20 states around the country through public television stations, multicast, and primary multicast channels, depending on where you are, also in some cases on smart TV sets and smart devices, and at least one multi-channel bundle, here's where you go online, fnx.org. That's fnx.org. And I should point out once again that stations from Nebraska Public Media have joined the FNX family this week. And here in New York, you can catch FNX as a primary digital carrier of WNET, part of the WNET group. Frank Blankwith, the overseer of FNX, thank you again for joining us. It's been a treat having you on to update us. It looks like a lot of progress has been made since we last talked to you. So I'm happy you're with us, and great continued success with what you've got coming up.
Thank you so much, Simon. Good talking to you, as always.
Same here, Frank. Take care. All the greatest.
All right. Bye-bye.
Frank Blankwith from FNX joining us live from San Bernardino, California. Coming up in our next half hour, you'll meet the Emmy-nominated cinematographer of the acclaimed HBO series of last summer, 100-Foot Wave. What it took for Mike Prickett to do that series is an inspiring story unto itself. You'll hear him tell it live from Honolulu, Hawaii, when we come back after the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you want a fun internet radio experience, check out Women Who Jam Radio. That's today at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, Women Who Jam Radio, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, Best Beat Chart 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised. Welcome those of you just joining us at the bottom of the hour. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from New York. 78 degrees now at the bottom of the hour. If you have questions or comments for our next guest or TV overall, give us that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Rick Webb, our good friend from Philadelphia, is already in the room. Last summer, HBO ran an acclaimed series about the world of big-time surfing called 100-Foot Wave. It's a show that's gotten several Emmy nominations this summer and is coming back for a second season, hopefully next summer. The person you're about to hear has been nominated for nonfiction cinematography in a series for his work on 100-Foot Wave, and what it took for him to do it is really an amazing story unto itself. Joining us live from Honolulu, Hawaii, an InterRadio exclusive 2022 Primetime Emmy nominee, Mike Prickett. Mike, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Simon, for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you. First of all, you've had a couple weeks now to savor the idea of being nominated. What goes through your mind as we get ready for the Emmy Awards next month?
Oh, we're all really excited. It was a lot of work putting this show together, getting all the team in place and out to Nazare for every swell. And we're excited that we've done it all and we've got nominated for an Emmy. So we're all excited.
And this is an assignment that almost didn't happen because of something you did on a previous assignment before taking 100 Foot on. And it was one involving you getting a case of the bends.
Yeah, I got the bends in Tahiti in 2012, which left me paralyzed from the waist down. So I had to do a lot of things to reinvent myself to making movies in a different manner than I was used to. And then we built a couple remote-controlled jet ski rigs and all kinds of stuff like that. And then we're able to capture big waves in Nazare for that film.
Explain that. Before you had the bend situation, how would you photograph a series like 100-Foot Wave? And then afterward, in terms of after all the therapy you had to take, how did that change the technique in terms of doing a series like this?
Well, before I got the bend, I would normally swim and shoot only from the water. I never really shot from land as much. So that was my best thing I could do is always swimming in the water and shooting. And then in March of 2012, I got the bend from diving down. I was rescuing a guy that was ran out of air, and I went and shared my air with him, and then we ran out of air he was down 220 feet, and on the way up about 100 feet, I ran out of air, and then I came up, and we were on a remote island in Tahiti. It took about 6 hours to get us to a decompression chamber, and as a result of that, I got the bends that paralyzed me, so So now that I can still swim, but not as good as I used to, and I developed some other techniques and gyro-stabilized gimbals that we could control from land to get some different shots. And then we did a movie called Chasing Mavericks. I actually was filming the last week of Chasing Mavericks when I got injured in Tahiti. I wasn't shooting for Chasing Mavericks, but it was the last week of shooting. And in that, I was a director of photography for the water for the Chasing Mavericks. So for the 100-foot wave, I did similar type of work, but Chasing Mavericks, I was more in the water, and 100-foot wave, I was more just doing director photography stuff and using these new techniques. And also I had other great cameramen working with me and on the cliff, in the water, and everything like that.
Yeah. I want to get back to the techniques that you use for this series. And I've seen some of your cinematography. It is absolutely spellbinding. But first, I think we have a call. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello, you're on the air. Go right ahead. Okay, apparently that person may have dropped off for a second. We'll try again in a little bit. And if you have to, call back 646-652-2906 or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Mike, how did you get the assignment for 100-foot wave? Again, when people see this series, it really is taking the whole idea of surfing to an entirely different dimension than what people usually see it.
Yeah, I got the job. Actually, I've done many movies, and I'm a specialist of surfing big waves, and I did like Chasing Mavericks right before that, and before that I did Bethany Hamilton's Soul Surfer, and so I'm known for shooting big waves and surfing, and so that's kind of how I got the call, is to how to capture the gigantic waves of Nazaré and make sure our crew came home safely. So that was our job, to basically capture it. We had about 12 cameramen working on the water part of this shoot, and we had people up on the cliff, guys in the water. We had Laurent in the water getting the water angle, and then we had some high-speed cameras shooting really high speed, like up to 1,000 frames a second, to get that slow motion feel.
And I understand that the subject of this series, Garrett McNamara, is a pioneer unto himself in terms of showcasing surfing to the public.
Yeah, Garrett is a pioneer for himself. He's been doing this for a long time. And actually, that's another good point you brought up, because I've been shooting Garrett since he was young and just, you know, started jamming in his professional career. So I had a lot of archival footage of Garrett that I could bring to the table as well. I actually still have one more roll of film I just found out that I never processed, so I'm going to process that roll of film and just see what's on it. But, yeah, so I had a lot of archival footage of Garrett, and I've had a long record of shooting Garrett, so that was very helpful as well. He's also a good friend of mine, so we worked together very well, so that helped in getting the job and can kind of also help in getting the shots that we wanted, because we've already worked for so many years together. So when we came up to the 100-foot wave, we were just doing what we've always done in the past, so it was pretty simple.
Mm-hmm. Mike Prickett is our third 2022 Primetime Emmy Award nominee we have highlighted in recent weeks here on Tomorrow Be Televised. He's up for Best Cinematography in a Nonfiction Series for the acclaimed HBO program 100-Foot Wave, which actually ran last summer. Because it did, it qualified for this year's Primetime Emmy Awards, which is taking place on Monday, September 12th, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on NBC, and for the first time simulcast on a mega content service, namely Peacock, owned by NBC's parent, NBC Universal. Mike joins us live from Honolulu, Hawaii this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy, wherever you are, with a 100-foot wave or not, you're with us right now. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from New Weber, New York. 78 degrees at the bottom of the hour. So the question or comment for Mike, well, just ring that call in, 646-652-906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up on our second episode of the week, that's tomorrow at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, we'll have the co-creators of the new all-black series, Send Help, that premiered last week. They are Insecure alumni Gene Ellie and Mike Goyo. And a few hours after we have them live, I'll be able to see them live here in New York at a special event in Brooklyn's Industry City District honoring the series. That's Gene Ellie and Mike Goyo from Send Help on All Black. They'll join us live right here, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, our second of four episodes this week right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Let's see if we finally have our caller. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from? Go ahead, you're on the air. Hello? Okay, not on. So if you're having a problem getting through, give us a call again, 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see you ready to go on the air, we'll have you on the air. Mike, I understand that for part of this series, you did something very unique. You used scooters, and those scooters are underwater, and they were able to be used as a dolly, a movable camera, if you will, to take a lot of the underwater shots. How did that work? And is, was this a trial and error kind of thing?
We developed these scooters for some underwater shoots, like a BBC kind of dolly track underwater, so you kind of turns a camera into like a dolphin angle, and so you can go up to like 20 knots underwater really fast, and kind of do it kind of like a dolly angle. So we developed that a little while before, and then and tried to implement that into the film.
Mm-hmm.
So
it
basically has a big like. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, it basically has like a gigantic like 8K VistaVision camera in front of the big Gates housing, which is super heavy. And normally, if you swim with that, it's you're just swimming at a snail's pace. But once we put it on this underwater scooter, we can go up to 140 feet deep, and we can jump out of the water like a dolphin and get anything in between that. So it's pretty exciting, and it's kind of the new wave of filming underwater because it kind of makes it like you're actually a fish. You can keep up with the dolphins and the whatever that you're around, and it's not like a scuba view. It's like a fish view.
How did you get into the kind of cinematography you do, doing things in the area of water?
You know, I was a surfer growing up in high school, and I was surfing, and I actually got hurt way back then, and I injured my legs back then previously to this injury. But I, the doctor told me that I should – I was taking pictures of my friends surfing back then just from land, and then the doctor told me I should put my camera in a water housing and swim as therapy to get more exercise. So that's what I did. I started swimming and swimming and shooting, trying to get my legs stronger way back then in, when I was in high school with my camera. And then I loved it so much that I started to surf less and take more pictures. So I used to go on surf trips normally at first just with my surfboard. And then as I got better at shooting, I started bringing my surfboard and my camera. And then as I got really good at it, I found myself just bringing my cameras on shoots and borrowing surfboards along the way. And then ultimately I ended up just only shooting and hardly got to surf at the end because, whenever the waves were good, I had to shoot. And then when it was junk and for me to surf, I just didn't surf because I was so tired from shooting. So that's kind of how it started. And then I started out doing stills, and then I moved into video or film back then. We shot 16 millimeter film. And then I just moved on from there to doing commercials and movies. And that's been my passion, and I loved it since I started, and I still love it to this day.
Did classic television shows like Sea Hunt or Flipper or movies like Endless Summer by Bruce Brown, did they inspire you in any way in terms of your style of underwater photography?
Yeah, Bruce Brown was actually a good friend of mine. I've visited him plenty of times, and I worked with his son on a bunch of different movies afterwards. So yeah, he did inspire me, and then it inspired me to get more of a surfer's angle. And a lot of that stuff back in the day was shot all from land. And then when you're surfing, you're paddling out over the shoulder and you're looking at guys surfing, and you get a different angle from the water than you would from land. And that kind of got me excited back in the day to shoot kind of more of that. Everyone does it now. It's like millions. Back in the day, there was like five or six really good guys. And now there's like millions of people that are doing it. Everyone's got their phone, and everyone's out there in the water with their GoPro. So it's changed a lot over the years, but it's exciting to watch technology kind of take over.
Are there certain things or certain techniques or practices that you have to do with shooting a series underwater or on water or the waves coming crashing, you know, at a particular beach or location that are special to the art? That make the art so spectacular to see?
I mean, shooting from the water is harder, obviously, than just shooting from land. Like, a lot of times if you have a director and you're shooting a scene on land, you know, the director's right there looking at the shot and you can see it. In the water, we do it for diving. Sometimes on the boat we'll have a cable running up and the director can watch the scene from a boat and go, yeah, that looks good, I got it, or redo it, or take two, take three, whatever it is. But we do that sometimes, but most of the times when you're out in stuff like 100-foot wave, there's no take one, take two, or, you know, calling another wave in. It's like you got to deal with Mother Nature as it comes. And so all the cameramen are very well-versed in Mother Nature and the just kind of getting a shot on their own. They don't have to rely on a director over their shoulder saying they got it or not. They know what the director wants, and the director has to trust each individual to get what he asked for. And so that's kind of the hard part about it, and I think it's hard for the directors to kind of let go and say, okay, this is what I want, and get it. And but after a while, they realize that we know what they want, and they actually get more from us than they ask, because a lot of times they'll want this one certain shot, and we'll get that shot, but plus we'll get the paddle in or the wipeout after and all the stuff that helps tell the story. So I think, there's special techniques used in the water, but a lot of times in big surf, or if you're out there shooting whales or dolphins or something just happens, you just roll on it. You don't have the special setups to have a director watch stuff. So I think that's one of the hardest things from shooting from the water.
Are we seeing use of special types of cameras like drone cameras or GoPros or microcams in doing this kind of television?
Yeah, we do use GoPros mounted on the surfboards. Originally, this was going to be an iMac film. So originally, we were going to build different housings, you know, that are much bigger, you know, to house bigger format cameras. But at the end, HBO grabbed onto this, and we were able to use almost any format camera to get what they want. And it worked out good because they did use a lot of archival footage, and so everything kind of mixed up together made a compelling story, I believe. And Garrett's story was very interesting in itself. So all that together is what I think made 100-Foot Wave so compelling to watch.
100-Foot Wave, which premiered on HBO last summer and is up for several Primetime Emmy Awards this year, will be back for a second season, hopefully next summer. We have Mike Prickett. He is up. He's one of those people that's Primetime Emmy nominated for the series, specifically for Best Cinematography in a Nonfiction Program. And Mike joins us live from Honolulu, Hawaii this half hour on this first of four editions this week. Tomorrow will be televised. The promo about TV's current and future. Simon, I'm with you on the other side of the U.S. of A, New York, 78 degrees at the moment. If you have a question or comment remaining minutes with Mike, make that call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. As I mentioned, Mike is our third 2022 Primetime Emmy nominee on this program. We originally had the Insecure film editor, Nina Erb, who's already won one Emmy Award for that role, and she's up for a second one next month. And we recently had Christopher McDonald, the actor you've known from a wide variety of roles, including some of TV's most iconic personalities, real and fictional. He's up for Best Guest Actor in a Comedy Series for the HBO Max program, Hacks. If you missed those two recent segments, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Go to our podcast destinations, and go to our website, tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. That's tomorrowwillbetelevised.onpodium.com. And stay tuned. Coming up at the top of the hour, our classic trivia question. If you haven't gotten the question, you have an opportunity to win three prizes now if you are first with that correct answer, and we're just waiting for that answer from you. You could be that winner, so stay tuned. Get your thinking caps ready to go. Mike, what surprised you about the reaction to 100-Foot Wave? For example, I don't think a lot of people expected that a series like this would get like a 100% score or close on Rotten Tomatoes for the critics.
Yeah, I was surprised. You know, surfing, for the most part, like a lot of surf shows, don't get a lot of reaction because there's not that many surfers, really, if you think about it, in the world. You know, there's a lot of motorbike, and they can do all these sports throughout the mainland where there's no water around. But surfing has less people. But I think over the years, more and more people have been getting into surfing and water sports. And also the story about Garrett and the finding of Nazare and the Joe Lewis and Chris, they put together a pretty good story, and I think that's what got everyone to really like it, and I think that was so exciting that so many people watched it, and I didn't realize it did so good on Rotten Tomatoes. That's a good score. But, yeah, I'm super excited and excited for the next season.
Have you heard about what next season will be all about? Have you been asked to come back and do cinematography for that season?
Yeah, I did some work on it. I was doing work from afar, but we had a crew doing the land stuff, and Laurent's doing the water and the jet ski stuff. And, yeah, that's about all I can say so far. It's a secret.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be out soon.
Going back to the first season, was it all shot in one location? And if it wasn't, how did your game plan have to shift from location to location?
Yeah, it wasn't all shot in one location. Our main location was Nazaré, Portugal. And we're located in Hawaii, Salt and Air Studios. We have a studio in Hawaii. We have all our gear in Hawaii. And Salt and Air Studios had to get ping from Hawaii to Nazaré on a moment's notice when every time a big swell would come. So that was hard, you know, getting through customs and making sure we got everything that we needed there, each swell, to make sure we had all the toys that we wanted in place. We were able to leave some toys there because going back and forth, we found out right off the bat was a little complicated due to customs and all the nature of travel. But then we did more filming in Hawaii with Garrett, his home over here, and we did like some stuff from the Eddie Aikau opening ceremony. And then we also had footage shot from Tahiti and all these other places prior to all of that. Like all the archival stuff was shot in Tahiti and Mavericks. That big wipeout at Garrett was at Mavericks, but that's in Northern California. So it is hard to get equipment, all that stuff. In fact, Salt and Air Studios right now has all their equipment in Tahiti because it's been cranking over there. We have it stored in a 20-foot container in Tahiti just because the customs in Tahiti is really hard to get through. And a lot of times you'll go somewhere and you'll land with your equipment, and they will hold it, and then by the time they hand it back to you, the swell is gone. So we found it's easier to try to get as much of the main equipment there ahead of time and then just fly in with a little bit of handheld stuff that it's easier to get through customs, you know, on a spur of the moment.
We always ask this of people involved with nature or natural history programming, which is that given the situation, it's not you direct Mother Nature. Mother Nature directs you on her terms, or Father Nature on his terms, especially with something like surfing, where you're like looking for, as Bruce Brown would have said, the perfect wave. How do you deal with that and compounding that with the pandemic?
Yeah, you know, it's really hard. It is. We do a lot of stuff for the BBC and, you know, Wild Space and that kind of stuff. And dealing with Mother Nature, you know, like if it's a fish or an octopus or something like that, a lot of times you're right there and you can work with them and you get a shot after a shot. But a 100-foot wave, it's when once a gigantic wave goes by, that's it. That's one time and it's done. And you may never get another chance to shoot that wave with that person on it. So, to do that, it's just having the right people in the right places at the right time and getting the toys in all those locations at the right time. And it's almost impossible, but it does happen. And you're right, Mother Nature does predict everything, and especially in surfing. Because a lot of times when you get there, like Nazaré, in the morning it's really foggy. So even all the long lenses can't shoot through the fog. So sometimes we're only – can have like maybe a guy on a jet ski shooting because he's a little closer and there's less foggy shooting through. Or it's what's worked really good is we've had a lot of drones. We put drones really close and they get right up there and you can see the guy through the fog and all that. So that's been very helpful. Technology's definitely helped us out throughout all this. And if
so
it would have been impossible to do all this
to
film.
Go to season 2 on HBO. Mike, what's next for you in terms of TV assignments?
Well, we're doing a really big shoot with Red Bull and Surfline right now, and it's kind of like we're just chasing big waves around the world. And then also we have two feature films that we're working on. One is at Mavericks, again, kind of the same place that we shot Chasing Mavericks when I got hurt. And then we do some TV shows here in Hawaii, like NCIS and stuff like that. We do some aerial stuff for that. So we've been pretty busy at the moment. And we've also been developing this new camera system. It's kind of similar to what we had, but this one has a 8K full-frame camera in it, and it can go really slow motion, and it's a six-axis gimbal that we can control up to about 2 miles away on a jet ski. And it's waterproof. The other ones we had before, they weren't waterproof. These ones now, they can actually be submerged in the water on a dolly or a crane and go 20, 30 feet underwater, and they can pop up and go into the air. We hang them from a helicopter, 100 foot below a helicopter, and you can drop it into a wave underneath the water and pop it up. So it's a new toy that we're developing, and it's just about done. I think we'll have it done in November, just ready for the next season.
You sometimes wonder whether, if these tools were available and others, some of the pioneers of underwater TV cinematography, like Lamar Boren on Sea Hunt and Riku Browning on Flipper. I believe Sea Hunt episodes are on YouTube. I think Flipper also. And you should check out their cinematography. You wonder what they could have done with tools like that. All in our imagination. Anyway, the second season of 100 Foot Wave will be coming up next year on HBO. I believe the first season episodes are now on HBO Max, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And the 2022 Primetime Emmy Awards take place Monday, September 12th, live to both coasts, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on NBC, and for the first time streamed on Peacock. Check your local links for the NBC station in your area. Of course, Peacock available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and also through local cable systems like Comcast, the parent company of NBC Universal. And for a full lineup of all the Primetime Emmy Award nominees, go to Emmys.com. That's the official website of the TV Academy, the people behind the Emmy Awards. That's Emmys.com. Mike Prickett, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on your nomination. Good luck to you next month with it, as well as the other people nominated from 100 Foot Wave. And stay in touch. We would love to hear about your further exploits in television. You are a very remarkable person, and it's been a delight having you on the program.
Simon, thanks for having me, and I look forward to talking to you again in the future.
You got it. Take care. Have a fantastic week ahead.
Aloha.
From Honolulu, Hawaii, Mike Pritchard joining us live from there. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. We first offered the question last week, second week around. And if you're first with the correct answer, you can win the Nickelodeon Loud House Christmas card set, plus two books from former and more recent TV guests. The novel, The Unexpected Danny Green, by Paul Friedman, that may be considered for a potential television series down the road. And from PR guru on the West Coast, Dan Harari, Flirting with Fame, where he talks about all the interesting things he's done with the likes of Bruce Springsteen and other celebrities, TV, and other forms of entertainment. And that all can be yours if you know the answer to this question. Chevy Chase was the original Weekend Update anchor person on Saturday Night Live. Who was second? Chevy Chase was the original Saturday Night Live anchor person back in 1975. Who was second about a year later? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win all three of those prizes, two best-selling books and the Nickelodeon Loud House Christmas card set, all coming your way. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWT. We're one away, by the way, from over 790 followers on the site. One last time is the question. Chevy Chase was the first Weekend Update anchor person on Saturday Night Live back in 1975. Who was second? I believe came aboard in 1976 into that role. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if you're first with the answer, you'll win. If you're a previous winner, not eligible. So get in the game today, and all the very best. When we come back after the top of the hour, we'll have News Note Quickies. We'll have two update segments for you, or up segments. One on our effort to try to get people from two of the most anticipated shows of recent years coming out over the next month, House of the Dragon next Sunday on HBO, and Lord of the Rings on Amazon Prime Video September 2nd. And yes, we have an update on what we talked about last Monday about ESPN's controversial Sunday Night Baseball experiment, an experiment that was repeated last night with tough consequences. And it was highlighted on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio Morning Show, today. So more details about that. And we'll have a comment about a CNetNews.com story this morning suggesting that we may be in for the era of NFT-based television. All of that after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tunein.com. Together, we reach over 7 million listeners around the world every month. For another unique internet radio experience, check out Proof Negative. It's on this Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Proof Negative, right here, positively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget Best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Monday afternoon, the Ides of August, 2022. August 15th for the rest of you all. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. Welcome to the program to all of you joining us at the top of the hour. 78 beautiful degrees at the top. And if you have a question or comment on our topics coming your way in the remaining half hour of this program, we want to hear from you. So give us a call. And here's the number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You'll catch us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. And you can also use our chat room to weigh in. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Our good friend Rick Webb from Philadelphia already in the room. Don't forget, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline anytime you like. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Coming up, a double up segment. One about our effort to get people from House of the Dragon, Lord of the Rings on this program in coming weeks. And we'll have an update on the Sunday Night Baseball experiment that was first tested last week and came on last night. And boy, did it backfire. Plus, we'll have a feature on NFT-based television that came out in a story this morning on CNetsNews.com site. But first, let's give you some news note quickies. Tubi is moving forward with a second Toon comedy series after The Freak Brothers. Breaking Bear, that's right, Breaking Bear is the name, described as a mashup of Yogi Bear with The Sopranos. Apple TV Plus's next Good for All Ages scripted series will be Live by Ella, launching on September 2nd. Best-selling author Whitney Strieber will participate in Shock Doc, The Visitors, an alien abduction-themed special coming to Travel Channel and Discovery Plus September 5th. VH1 will keep RuPaul's Drag Race, that's RuPaul's Drag Race, going for a 15th season next year. The series is up for 11 Emmy Awards next month, and it's already won quite a bunch in its 14 seasons on the air. Another Emmy quickie, Gina Davis's Institute on Gender and Media, based in Bentonville, Arkansas, will be this year's Governor's Award honoree. Davis will accept the award at the Primetime Emmy Awards September 12th on NBC and simulcast on Peacock. Breaking news in the last hour, 70 HBO and HBO Max employees will be pink-slipped in the coming weeks, especially in the area of nonfiction television and kids and family programming. And tonight marks the final night of Better Call Saul's run on AMC. Star Bob Odenkirk will move on to a new AMC series premiering next year. And some of the Better Call Saul people will be involved behind the scenes. And that is news notes for today. All right. Well, first up, let's have some notes about, in case you missed our first hour, we let off the news notes section with the word that Nexstar is taking over the CW. And to tell you about that, let me just bring again that story for you. Once again, Nexstar is taking over the CW. They picked up a 75% equity stake in that venture, which was formerly co-managed by Paramount and Warner Brothers Discovery. Both organizations will keep a 12.5% stake in the CW. They'll produce original scripted content and only under this deal through next summer. Whether that relationship will continue beyond mid-2023 is a question mark right now. And if in case you missed it, there was an investor debrief this morning by Nexstar that happened to not have a question and answer session. And the executives at Nexstar promised to spend $2 billion a year on programming for both the broadcast network and the CW's 24/7 application that is offered through smart TV sets and devices. In addition, they also are predicting that the overall operation will be profitable by 2025. Also, Mark Pedowitz, the chief executive officer of the CW, will stay on that capacity for the near term and handle day-to-day operations. A couple of early observations. I think Nexstar made it very clear on the conference call and also on a presentation you can find at their website under Investor Relations that the CW, after this coming season, is in for a lot of changes. The sense is that you're going to see far less scripted programming, or if you have scripted programming, it's not going to be all from Paramount and the CW, including all the Greg Berlanti superhero and other shows, unless they boost up their ratings, both online and offline, the broadcast and offline and online. But also, you'll see a lot more nonfiction shows. You will see scripted and unscripted shows from other players beyond Paramount and Warner Brothers. You will see more shows for the CW app of an original fame. You may see some acquisitions, too. And you may see some syndicated shows get additional runs on the CW, one way or another. Also, in case you don't know, Nexstar is the parent company of News Nation. And I got a sense on the call today, particularly from Perry Sook, that News Nation is going to have a role in the CW to some degree, whether it is a show on their primetime broadcast lineup, which is from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, Monday through Sunday, or maybe the possibility of News Nation getting into the Sunday morning show wars, like Meet the Press, Face the Nation, This Week, Fox News Sunday, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Also, there may be a possibility that The Hill, which Nexstar acquired some time back, and it is going to have its own television channel through Plex, the multi-channel bundle. We will have representatives of both Plex and The Hill on our program this Friday, that The Hill may have a role to play in the CW. We will see. The sense you get is that the CW, after this coming season, is in for a lot of change. Question, what will happen to all the WB shows that are on the CW right now, like Superman and Lois, like All-American and All-American Homecoming, and so on and so forth? Well, I suggest they start looking for a new home for the fall of 2023. There's a lot of possibilities. Obviously, Mega Content Services, HBO Max, not clear. But perhaps there may be some other places to go. And depending on what kind of rights that the individual producers or production companies with Warner Brothers or Paramount have in terms of finding new homes for these services. I have a hunch that the Paramount shows will also go to Paramount Plus. So again, we'll have to wait and see. Remember, some of this is determined by whether or not this original programming content deal that right now from Paramount and Warner Brothers with their equity stake, 12.5% each, whether that will continue beyond next summer. So we will have to wait and see. But no question in my mind that after next year, the CW is in for a lot of change. Some of it may be for the better in terms of the amount of productions that have come from other places, in terms of unscripted series also having a more prominent role in the network and in the CW app. And maybe, just maybe, Nexstar is going to boost the distribution of the CW app to as many smart TV sets and devices and multi-channel bundles as they can. And don't forget that Nexstar is involved with STIRR, the Sinclair-owned multi-channel bundle. And I could see the CW app being part of that and maybe tied in with a News Nation programming service as well, bundled up, sort of a mini bundle within the multi-channel bundle. We'll have to wait and see. I'd love to hear what you think about the Nexstar move. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04, by name. On Friday, now it's time for Up as an update, where we catch up on guests and topics on this program, and this time we have a double dip for you. Here's dip number one. On Friday, we mentioned that we were going to try to make the maximum effort possible to have two of the most anticipated television series this year and in recent years to have people on this program. House of the Dragon, the Game of Thrones prequel that premieres this Sunday night on HBO, and The Lord of the Rings of Power, the long-anticipated series based on a J.R.R. Tolkien set of stories that Amazon has spent at least $500 million on and has a second season already in hand, and maybe think about creating a universe of shows based on Tolkien lore, that will premiere on September 2nd. Well, we got the word out to both organizations, HBO and Amazon, that we wanted to have people on, and today we have answers from HBO. Right now, it looks like we will not have the showrunners or anybody else involved with House of the Dragon on before the show premieres. Why? They're still working on post-production to wrap up the series. And right as we speak, in London, there is a screening of House of the Dragon going on. There was one in Los Angeles a couple weeks ago. There will not be one in New York from what we understand. So while it looks like HBO is not going to be able to provide people for a House of the Dragon tomorrow be televised segment pre-premiere next Sunday, there is a chance that we may get people premiere during the run of the series on HBO. And we've made it clear to HBO and HBO Max, we would like to have somebody on, whether it is the executive producers and showrunners like Ryan Condal, who did Colony for USA Network, or have some of the writers or directors, or maybe even some of the stars, or cinematographers, or music composers. Anyone who's available, we're game to have them on this program. And they've kept the door open, and we'll keep you posted. Now, with Lord of the Rings, we may have a shot. We may have a shot at getting, can't promise, But we heard from them today, and they're interested in the opportunity to be on this program before Lord of the Rings premieres on September 2nd. We have given them the latest available dates this week and next week. We haven't determined yet whether we'll do a three-episode week, the final week of August in September. But whatever dates we can do, we will let them know. And we'll keep them posted and, of course, keep you posted if we can get somebody from Lord of the Rings pre-premiere. And the same thing happens. We can't get them pre-premiere. We'll get somebody. We'll have to get somebody during the run of the series on Amazon. So that's where we stand with up subject number one. Now up subject number two. A week ago today, we did a portion of our program about an incident the previous night on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball that we heard about that morning from Keyshawn Johnson, the co-host of Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. That's the ESPN morning radio show. That first 2 hours of simulcast on ESPN 2, second two on ESPN News. And it went like this, that ESPN, during their game last Sunday night, interviewed a player who was mic'd up, and they interviewed this person not on the sidelines, not in the dugout, before or after the game or during inning, but on the field, in the outfield, as the inning is being played. I said, I can tell you that Johnson was livid, I mean livid, about the situation. In fact, it was so livid that the folks at Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max made it the second topic on the program. And he said, mark our words, this is going to backfire. And I said in this program, I felt that what ESPN did was reprehensible. It was just absolutely shocking that they did it, that they did it with a field of play, and they involved the ESPN announcing team of Carl Ravitch and analysts, and doing that interview, again, while it was on the field. We wondered who at ESPN gave the green light to do this, who at Major League Baseball approved the idea of it, and we suggested that this thing, if it's done again, could backfire. What, God knows, or goodness knows, would happen if they interviewed somebody while play was going on and something happened. Somebody hit a home run, base hit, et cetera, et cetera. Guess what? Last night, it happened. During the New York Yankees-Boston Red Sox game from Fenway Park in Boston, Red Sox won 3-0. Sure enough, ESPN did an interview with the shortstop of the New York Yankees, who I will not name because I do not want to embarrass this person on a worldwide distributed internet radio program. And he was asked during this segment, what do you think about Aaron Judge hitting all these home runs, being the home run leader? How many more do you think he's going to hit? And lo and behold, after that question was asked, somebody hit a ball the shortstop's way. And the shortstop couldn't get in time, so it ran into the outfield, bobbled in as a ground ball for a base hit. Happened in the middle of a play. ESPN asked this shortstop from the New York Yankees, what do you think about Aaron Judge, your teammate? How is he going to do with the home run record? And while that question was asked, and he was about to answer, bang, ground ball, hit right at him. He misses. He can't get his glove on the ball to make a play. Goes in the outfield, base hit. And once again, Keyshawn Johnson brought it up, second segment between 6 and 6:30 on Keyshawn J. Will Max. And he said, I told you so. This was going to happen. You know, I don't like this. It ought to stop. And sure enough, I saw the segment on Keyshawn J. Will Max. They actually had the footage of it. And amazing. If he wasn't talking with that person, chances are when you see the footage and the camera angle, he would have made the play. On the ground, with that ground ball, got it to first or second, wherever he needed to go to make the play and cut the out. But instead, base hit, and probably had an impact on the game, because it got a person on base from the Red Sox to help them win the game 3-0. So once again, I want to repeat what I said last time. What ESPN is doing is frankly despicable. It's disgusting. It doesn't help the sport. It doesn't help ESPN. And now we know it can impact the outcome of an inning or a game. So once again, this has got to stop. ESPN must immediately cease this situation. And whoever at ESPN gave the green light for this, and whoever at Major League Baseball gave the green light for this, should both be reprimanded, and now I would suggest, because of what happened last night, they be suspended for a month, at minimum. Somebody has got to be made an example of. And ESPN must understand there is a line not to cross when it comes to interviewing players around a game. You can do it in the dugout, pre-post game. You can do it during an inning in the game, whether it's the player or the manager. And when you have a player mic'd up and they are in play, in the game, playing the game, you are crossing the line. You are not doing the fans good. You're not doing the players good. And you're not doing the sport of baseball good, or any sport that you do this. It's one thing to have a football player mic'd up and go to the sidelines after scoring a touchdown or kicking a field goal, and then it being interviewed by the sideline reporter. It's quite another thing to, again, impact the game by interviewing somebody who should be keeping their eye on what is going on in the game rather than an eye and an ear on what the ESPN announcer and analysts have to ask. Again, I'd like to hear what you think about this. I'm pretty clear what I think. I want to hear what you think. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name, and let's see what you have to say or what you have to say back, either through a phone call or through the chat room. So get on the horn, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. In a moment, we'll have one more thing to talk about, this idea of TV series based on non-fundable tokens, NFTs. First of all, I want to one more time give you our classic trivia question of the week in case you missed it before the top of the hour. Here it is, three prizes in play. Chevy Chase was the first Weekend Update anchor person on Saturday Night Live back in 1975. Who succeeded him? Who was second in 1976? Give you a hint. It was a woman. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. Enclose your name, where you're emailing from. First to answer, you will win two best-selling books, The Unexpected Danny Green by recent TVG guest Phil Friedman, and you'll also get the book about life in the entertainment PR fast lane, Flirting with Fame, by PR guru on the West Coast, Dan Harari. Also was on our show a few weeks back. Plus, the Nickelodeon Loud House Christmas card set. So for all three prizes, get your answer in with your name and address to simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if we don't get a winner by the end today, post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook is Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWT. However you want to get in, do so, and you can win. And all the very best to you. You know, in the history of television, there's a very fascinating timeline about how other media were used to impact television programming. When TV started in the late 1940s, early 1950s, and at that time there were basically four networks, NBC, ABC, CBS, and DuMont, at least in some major markets like New York and L.A. and Chicago, a lot of the TV programming was adapted from radio shows, whether it was comedy, dramas, westerns, anthology shows, musical variety shows, etc. Then, as time went on, well-known books were adapted into television series. Then as time went on, feature films were adapted into television series, like MASH. Then as time went on, comic book characters were adapted into shows, like Superman and Batman and The Flash and so on. And then came graphic novels like The Walking Dead and the independent comic books from places like Dark Horse and IDW, shows like Wynonna Earp. And then, more recently, podcasts, where you now are finding some podcast creators are developing mini studios that are designed not only to create scripted, unscripted podcasts, but adapt them for television series in various locations. Well, CNetNews.com came out with a feature this morning that was quite remarkable, suggesting that the next destination to find new television series will be universes, collections of non-fundable tokens, NFTs. Consider the following bits of news. Derek Kolstad, the creator of John Wick, famous character, we had the item in news notes earlier about the Continental becoming a series out on Starz on Peacock next year. Well, he has come up with an 8-episode anime series called Forgotten Runes, Wizards, Cult. The idea is that all these wizard characters, all created through NFTs, come together to save all sorts of situations in the world. Incidentally, Derek is working on Splinter Cell, which is a live-action scripted series for Netflix that's supposed to come on the air, if not late this year, next year. And again, this show, Forgotten Runes, Wizards, Cult, all the characters, at least the main characters, are created from NFT collectibles that are now available. Also, the actor and entrepreneur Seth Green is working on his own NFT called Bored Ape Yacht Club, and he's trying to turn that into a live-action or animated series. And Reese Witherspoon, the proprietor behind Hello Sunshine, which is doing all sorts of things from book clubs to television shows, some of which have won Emmy Awards and Peabody's over the last couple of years, they have an NFT collection now called World of Women, and we understand from this CNET story, they're working right now with showrunners and executive producers and show creators to turn some of those collectible characters into film and television shows. And one more item from this article, Spike Lee, the celebrated film and TV director, producer, entrepreneur, he is already working with New York University on a pilot program where TV projects and film projects would be funded through NFTs. And given the fact that these NFTs are more and more becoming collections with all sorts of characters operating in a similar universe, where that universe could become really, really special for movies, television, games, all sorts of things, we may be seeing the tip of the iceberg. I suggest you read this CNETnews.com story. It's at CNET.com or news.com, and I think it's really wonderful reading. So for all you NFT collectible people out there, guess what? The next television series might be created from one of your NFT creations. You never, never know. All right. Well, that is going to do it for this episode of Tomorrow Be Televised, extended near 90-minute show. Again, I want to thank our guest, Mike Prickett, 2022 Primetime Emmy nominee for his cinematography on the HBO series Wonderfoot Wave. It premiered last summer, so it qualifies for this year, and they have a second season on the way. And Frank Blankwith, the overseer of FNX, First Nations Experience, the Native American Content Channel, available through multicast signals on PBS stations, which either are on the digital subcarrier of a PBS station, including WAT here in New York, the WAT group, and on multicast cable and satellite channels. For more details about the service, fnx.org, and for more details about Wonderfoot Wave, hbo.com. I believe the first 10 episodes are now available on HBO Max. And once again, I want to remind you, the 2022 Primetime Emmy Awards take place Monday, September 12th, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, live to all time zones on NBC, on your local NBC station, and simulcast for the first time on Peacock, which, of course, is on smart TV sets, smart devices, also available through local cable operators and multi-channel bundles run by Comcast, the parent company of NBC Universal. So make sure you check all that out. And again, if you want to catch our recent Primetime Emmy Award nominee interviews with Tristan McDonald, guest actor in a comedy series from Hacks, and Nina Erb, up for film editing for the second time for her work on the Issa Rae series, Insecure, which wrapped up 5 seasons on HBO, go to Emmys.com. That's Emmys.com. Well, I hope you'll join us. We're just getting started. First of 4 episodes we're doing here on Tomorrow Be Televised this week. Haven't done a 4-episode week in a way long time. So we hope that you'll stay with us. Our other 3 episodes, that's tomorrow and Wednesday and Friday, all at the same hour, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have the co-creators of the new all-black scripted series, Send Help, former Insecure writers and alumni Gene Ellie and Mike Goyo. We'll catch up with them a few hours before they come here to New York for a special event at Brooklyn's Industry City District, spotlighting their new series. Then on Wednesday, among our guests, we'll have Peter Kosminski. He's the executive producer, writer, director of the well-anticipated Peacock miniseries, The Undeclared War. It's cyber terrorism taken to the max. And then a 90-minute episode coming your way on Friday. First up, from the new Apple TV Plus series, Surfside Girls, co-developer, executive producer, head writer, and showrunner, Mae Chan. Then we'll have the vice president of Strategic Alliances and Context for Sean Perplex, the multi-channel bundle, Sean Eldridge, and the general manager of The Hill, which is creating a new television channel that will be carried first on Plex, Jason Jedlinski. And the entertainment editor of the magazine True West, fanatic on movie and TV westerns, Henry Park. It's all coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, our fourth and final episode this week right here on Tomorrow We Televise. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televise. That's blogtalkradio.com/televise. Check out our podcast, available 24/7. Lots of good stuff to hear. You can find it at Apple Podcasts, on iTunes, on Apple TV, on Vizio Smart TV sets through Amazon Music, other places too, because that organization. Google Podcasts at podcast.google.com, the iRadio Podcast Network, Speaker Podcast, tunein.com, plus Acast, Verbal, and Reason. And if there's a podcast site that doesn't take our show, you'd like to hear it, take it. Well, all you got to do is, first of all, let them know in a very nice way you'd like to have our show be there. Let us know who to talk to. We'll talk to them. And sure enough, hopefully sooner than later, we will get our podcast on your favorite podcast site if it doesn't have it already. Love to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? And what's your thoughts about the future of television, where it's at and where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Facebook, LinkedIn, Simon Applebaum. Twitter at UBC Simon TWT. However you respond to us, we respond back to you within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. And don't forget, you can also respond through our website, tomorrowbetelevised.podium.com. Use the question section at the bottom of the home screen. Put the question in, and we'll respond. If we use your question on the air, you, of course, will get the credit. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not through those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Website service provided by On Podium, the internet's new podcast outpost. Tataris Bacus is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Monday. We'll be back tomorrow, regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, with our duo from Send Help on All Black, hours before they do their special event for the show here in Nueva York. That's 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, all of our podcast affiliates, and tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. Whatever you're up to between now and then, please make it safe and make it great. If you haven't been vaccinated, check in with your doctor. Find out your medical situation. Find out all the alternative treatments available to you right now, including the Pfizer and Merck pills. They're available at most pharmacies, the most pharmacy national chains, available in many cases without a prescription, and in many cases free. And then make a choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.